It's recording already, Brittany? It's recording already?
Call the meeting to order. This is the Waste Diversions Collection and Education Subcommittee of the Environmental Services Advisory Committee. Today is May 4th, 2022 at 3:01, according to my computer.
Yeah.
Roll call. This is Margo Garcia.
And Chrissy Arter present.
All right. And so we're 2 out of 3. So we have a quorum. Unfortunately, Yolanda will not be with us. There are the minutes for April 6th, which were sent to you. I had one question, which I couldn't. On page 2, MRF contract, it says, factors like the speed of the conveyor belt can affect the contamination and the ARC, ACR under the contract and profit sharing. It seems to me it should be just ACR and the ARC is a typo. Is that correct?
Yes.
That, okay. All right. So we'll just remove ARC and leave the ACR in. Okay. It's the kind of typing that I would do. Any other corrections?
No, right. I found it pretty complete.
Yep. That was well summarized. Because we did talk about a lot of things. So well done. Anyway, with that correction, the minutes are approved. All right. Chair's person's report. I don't know why I can't talk right now. All right, I had several things to share. First of all, as you all know, a newspaper reader. So we had comments about the garbage gas going unused from April the 3rd, which was just before our meeting. And then interestingly enough, this Arizona company benefits from recycling boom. And this was done later in April. And it had to do with the fact that Republic Services, which is the second highest stock market value of any Arizona-based corporation, has profited from a mini boom in recycled materials, helping to offset higher fuel and other costs. So I assume they're just talking about our MRF that they're showing there, just saying that people are recycling more and with the higher prices, they're getting more money.
They're certainly not sharing any of that with us.
I know.
I wondered. Yeah.
There were a couple of other interesting things from other things I follow. One is meet the recycling startup hustling to keep EV batteries out of the landfill. So as we get more electric vehicles, what are we going to be doing with their batteries and where are they going to go? And so there's a company called Li/Cycle was a bio response to General Motors' first e-Silverado. The initial production sold out in 12 minutes on the day it went for sale in early January. That's a pickup. Anyway, the problem is what to do with their batteries and where they're going to go. And so this company, which is now listed on the stock exchange, raised $500 million from investors to start figuring out how to recycle these batteries rather than put them into the landfill. So I think it's something that we need to, I'm sure we're watching, and I don't know, either Pat or Christina can mention whether we are in fact starting to see any electric vehicle batteries coming to the landfill or being taken to hazardous waste, or what are people in Tucson doing with them right now? And then the other was a really fascinating one from Bloomberg Green, which just came out at the end of April. And this is a guy who called himself a serious recycler, and he's from Portland. And he started collecting all the things that people wouldn't be taken in the cities. And so finally he's put together a company. He started out by collecting them in his basement, and then every week he and his son would pick one of the materials and they would go find a place to recycle it. And they put up the information on a bulletin board. But finally he decided to start a company. For $12 a month, Ridwell would pick up items like certain plastics, spent light bulbs from the porch, and take them to its local plant to sort and redistribute for recycling or reuse. But they take things like styrofoam, number one pet plastics, which are what the clamshells are made out of. Those are the clear clamshells. And now he's gone to Seattle, Denver, Minneapolis, and Austin, and the subscribers he's already gotten is about 60,000. And it's a company is part of a small group of environmental startups working to eliminate plastic packaging and creating a compostable plastic for mycelium. They called it a type of mushroom root, which of course, Christine, you and I will go, no, not exactly, but most of the people wouldn't know the difference. Anyway, it's too bad Tucson's not on that list. It would be interesting, but I sent these to Carlos and others thinking that there might be, I don't know, some way that we contact these people and see if they wouldn't like to join us, or what would be on the impact on the city if we did have such a company. Or is this one of the kind of groups that we're talking about, the Los Reales Sustainability Campus, that we would like them to come there and participate? So anyway, there's more interest and more stuff going on in recycling than we've seen before. Whoops, stop. That's my keyboard getting hit by things that don't mean to be there. All right. So waste diversion, there we are. Christina, interesting report.
Yeah, I'll share my screen. Let's see if it'll.
I love that aluminum is up over $2,000 a ton.
Yeah, it's always got such a good value, but the but you know, it's such a small percentage of what we get.
Well, it's the weight, but it's also great for all the nonprofits that are still collecting aluminum cans and turning the money.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Other opportunities. I'm part of a group that does that, so I'm sorry you don't get any of my cans.
That's amazing. Okay.
That is amazing, the change in that value over the last year. I mean, that's just phenomenal. I don't know how many thousands of percents it's gone up.
You know, I mean, the markets have been pretty steady. If you look at this, our tonnages pretty much across the board went up, which is good because we've been seeing stuff, you know, those tonnages go down. But, you know, contamination remains very high. So, you know, almost, it's still, you know, close to 30%. So, you know, I think that's just one of those things that we really have to try to address.
Christina, have you guys thought about contacting all the landlords in town? Because I struggle with anytime new renters come in, you know, they're the ones that leave their cans at the street, you see that they're recycling wrong and everything like that. I just think a lot of the problems could be coming from renters.
Well, I think that one of the things we kind of accept as a, and it was, I think, held to be true when we did the Feet on the Street project. You know, some of the areas where we have the worst contamination are in areas of town where there are a large percentage of renters. And unfortunately, due to our transient population in Tucson, it's always going to be that way. You know, between DM and the U of A and the Snowbirds, you have so many people coming in and out of this community constantly. You know, at one time we used to send welcome letters to new people, and you know, sometimes it was like 500 a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a huge.
I wish we could hold landlords accountable. And, you know, when they rent to someone new, they should have the information. You know, tell them about the app. Tell them, you know, what's going on. So anyways, I end up being the one that calls landlords on my street, but...
Probably. Yeah,
everyone is that obnoxious.
Well, I think it speaks also, Christina, to the need for more people in education. I can remember when you have been in front of the city council for budgets, and they ask about how much effort is going into education. And, you know, as many wonderful things as you do, you're only one, maybe assisted by another. But there could be one person full time whose job it was to contact new people who sign on, take them a letter, tag their barrels, you know, put together a whole plan to get a handle on this. And at $30,000 a month that we're paying, which is what, $360,000 a year, if my math is fast, that should pay for an employee, or at least half of that should pay for an employee. That would be able to do that job to bring that number down. I think we have to start looking at it in a different way. And I say that having read the report, which I thought was really very interesting and very well done. I think there's some good lessons in there for us.
Yeah. Well, I think so too. And, you know, I mean, Pat and I both believe that we could, you know, do, if we hired inspectors, you know, we could not only have them looking in bins, but they could address other things that are problems, like cans left at the curb and, you know, doing checks and people putting their brush and bulky out too early, you know, those things that would, you know, free up some of the code inspectors to look at more serious issues. You know, at $30,000 a month, that's $360,000. We could, you know, easily hire five inspectors and, you know, have them out on the streets. And you can see from what we did, we were now in the post sort, we actually would have been below the 18.7%. Yep. Had it not been for somebody putting a whole huge bag of batteries in there, 20 pounds worth,
yep.
You know, which was just, you know, pretty much of an anomaly. But, you know, and based on what the inspector said, when they were able to talk with people, you know, they were able to do that one-on-one education that is, you know, I mean, verifiably, it's the most effective way to educate people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just aware of this from now quite a few years ago at a national conference in Phoenix. My job that I took on was to stand by the all the cans, which we had, I think, six of them or five of them, and help people put their waste in the appropriate places, because we had compostable, we had to the landfill, we had to the pigs, which was all the organic waste. And I forget, I think, guess we separated out aluminum and paper. And it was so interesting to talk to people about it. How many people said this was really a different system than it was that at their hometown. I mean, these were people predisposed to doing this. And, you know, many of them said that the rules were different. And I know we were at a B&B in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they had big signs out about what their recycling program was, because it was quite different from ours. And so if I'd followed our program there, it would have been a problem for them. And so that's why I think we just, yes, you're right. People move in and out, but this is our opportunity. This is who we have. And if we're serious, then we really have to do something about educating the people as to how we do it in Tucson and how we do it now, and hire the people to do that. I mean, it isn't going to happen with fairy dust.
No, it's not.
So how can we do something to help this happen? Do we need to write a letter to the mayor and council and ask them to provide funding for five inspectors?
I think that mayor and council has been supportive, and when we've talked about enforcement in the past, and they kind of believe that, you know, if people aren't doing it right, we should not have them in the program. I think the challenge, and Pat can maybe address this, is, you know, right now we have so many other positions that we need to fill that, you know, this hasn't been a priority. But, you know, because right now they're not in the budget.
No, I know that. We would have to add them into the budget immediately. The budget was...
And the budget is done for this year.
Yeah.
Well, it's at the city council level, it's still under... They haven't adopted the top, I don't think. Did they this last time? It's a little early.
I think it's next
or something. It's next time, next meeting that they'll put the top on. So, I mean, if we could give them a figure of, let's just call it $360,000, which is what we're paying for contamination, that that money be added to the personnel for a place to do that and start the work of doing it. I mean, if we don't ask and we don't write out the job descriptions and if we don't put it into the mix, I mean, we won't get anybody.
So, Christina, looking at that report, I understand the $30,000. Am I reading that wrong? It says excess residue surcharge. Isn't that the percentage over the 18.7%?
Yes.
Okay. So the last 2 months we've averaged 18 and 17. So basically almost, you know, say 20, rounded up to 20,000, right? So you're looking at 240. So it has dropped from the original, because we were up about 330. 360 that we were paying, almost 380.
But the reason for that is because the ACR has gone up.
Correct.
Yeah.
And our tonnages have dropped.
So the trash residue is shown as still running.
We're still at 29%.
Right. You know, I still think that needs to be investigated further. I mean, I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that each month they're recalculating that residue, right? I mean, that's a standard that came from the last time they did the audit.
It's based on the last audit, yes.
Right. So that number is going to sit there until we have a new audit and change something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're having a challenge with that because we have done a couple of audits and it's still coming in 30%, 29%, 28%.
Well, yeah, right. I recognize that. And I'm still hoping that you'll have a report about the meeting that you had with them. But I think, let's just say it's still at 29 or 25%. That's still a charge. I mean, we can decide what number we want to ask for. I was using 30,000 since I've been that way for a while, but if we want to drop it to 240 and only get four inspectors using the money that we have from the surcharge due to the contamination, I mean, we're paying out that money anyway. It shouldn't be, you know, obviously we have to leave capacity in the budget to pay that money. But it seems to me that we should look at bringing that to zero and bringing up the inspectors to get people either out of the system who are doing that or continuing the education with the renters. I mean, the fact that you are doing 500 letters a week, you know, I don't think that's, well, maybe it's changed with COVID. We don't have quite the turnover we have, but we know with students coming in, you know, that's always going to be there, and the DM turnover as well. So we have two areas that are inherent in the economics of our community and are going to continue.
Mm-hmm. No, we know the transient nature of our population is not going to change.
Right. So our job is then to do something to help those people do the right thing. And all the research I've ever seen on recycling and environmentally sensitive behavior is helping give people the information to do the right thing. They want to do the right thing, most people, not all, and give them that information so that they can do it.
Can you guys ever do something on TV, like, you know, introduce the app? Because I'm sure there's so many people that don't know about it, and that could be helpful.
Well, I think that one thing we've seen with the app ever since we went to the every other week is, you know, we've got close to, we have about 45,000 people using it, which is a really good percentage. And I think that, you know, we've moved, like with Brush and Bulky, we've gone to where we're just sending one notice out every year. And I've heard from the staff that, you know, some of our Brush and Bulky loads lately have, you know, during the first half of the year, and they normally are, but during the first half of the year, they're much lighter, and they're hearing from people that they didn't know. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we did send something in the mail, but, you know, they're passing out information to people about the app as well. Okay. And
oh, you just need a real cute little ditty and someone to do a recycle coach dance or something like that. I don't know.
Well, I think that's one of the things, but, you know, people need to even, you know, TV is one way to reach people. And unfortunately, with so many channels these days, I don't know which one you use in order to reach people. So it seems to me the more the inspectors, the report shows, and we're kind of moving into that part of it.
Yeah.
That information that on the grounds on works. That one, yes. it brought down the level of contamination. People seemed glad in general to get the information. They talk about interaction with individuals. And so, I mean, we did the report to get this information. Now we need to act on it. And the act on it is we need inspectors out there concentrating in the areas of high turnover so people get that information. So, shall we that we want to, Chris, you and I want to make a motion to ask the full ESAC to send a letter to the city council asking for five inspectors using the money coming in from the surcharge, that being our aim to bring that down to where we don't have a trash surcharge anymore, and that I can write a draft of letter to go to the to go out for next week's meeting.
Oh, well, I think that would be excellent. So do you want to just...
you need to make a motion.
I need to make more a motion?
Well, the chair isn't technically supposed to make a motion.
No, you can using relaxed Robert's rules. The chair could make motions.
So, all right, I will make a motion that that this subcommittee recommend sending a letter to the mayor and council asking for ESAC to be given, we'll ask big, five inspectors using the money that is currently being spent on overage because of excess contamination. And their job will be to work on the ground, helping people know what the, our rules are.
Recycling. Okay. Well, I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
No, have you ever had inspectors before?
Yeah, we had one. We had, what's his name?
We used to, at one time, we used to actually have up to 10 inspectors.
Really?
Doing that? That was, but they were doing a lot of other things before they combined all the inspectors departments to look at everything. That's where, that's basically how code enforcement, you know, started out with all the different inspectors. And we used to have that, but they were, like I said, they were working at other items as well. But I think you can make the recommendation that is to at least reach out to the department and determine how many inspectors would be needed to see what that changes. Cause I don't know if you would say exactly 5 or 4 or 3, we don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. But allow the department to actually make a recommendation as to how many inspectors would actually be needed.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put that in the letter instead, the number.
How long ago was it that you had 10 inspectors? Do you remember?
That changed in 2006, I want to say.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, and then we had, I can't think of his name, who would go into neighborhoods and talk to people about recycling and check their cans.
Ernesto.
Hmm?
Ernesto.
Ernesto. I wanted to say Eduardo. I was close.
Ernesto. I was going to say Don Gibson.
Well, he probably did it too.
Yeah.
No, I was thinking of Ernesto that did that before. Okay.
So are you going to...
I will draft the letter. And Brittany, can you please put it on the agenda for the meeting? I guess I'm not allowed to ask that. Chris, could you ask Brittany to put it on the agenda, please?
I think it's Lucy. Hello?
Yes, I heard. I will add it.
Oh, okay.
Good. Thank you. And I will try to get it to you by tomorrow. Draft letter, or today is Wednesday, Friday at the latest.
Are you going to talk a little bit about the report?
Yeah, do we want to continue with the report?
Sure.
What were your takeaways from it?
Well, I think that, you know, it kind of really, you know, the Recycling Partnership, they introduced this program, Feet on the Street, several years ago, and it's moved through a lot of communities. And generally speaking, I'm not aware of any community where it hasn't been implemented, where it hasn't really helped. They provide all the tools and the tags, and, you know, they've learned so much since they started doing this that, you know, they were a really great support for us in, you know, using that grant money. You know, I think the numbers really kind of speak for themselves. We went out to 15 routes total, 3 routes a day. And, you know, we saw the numbers of tags go down over the 4 weeks that, you know, that we inspected. I guess it was actually 30 routes because it's A week and B week. And we did get some pushback from people. I think that's something that, you know, is bound to happen when you have, you know, especially I think right now there's such a feeling of people not wanting government, you know, doing anything in their lives and not trusting. So, you know, we had some of that, but I think that, you know, most of the people I spoke to that had questions about it when they knew the reasons and how much it's costing us, they understood it. You know, they thought that, yeah, okay, you know, something needs to happen. So, you know, and I think we would only be better, you know, if we had inspectors that were actually city employees, because, you know, they wouldn't need to go see the good recyclers every time. They, you know, they would only need to go back to see the ones that were tagged and follow up with them. But, you know, for purposes of the grant, we went to the same houses over four service days, or four service weeks. So you could see the biggest contaminant was plastic bags. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, that just, I don't know, it boggles the mind, because I know that never ever in the history of our recycling program have those been accepted. They've always said no plastic bags.
People don't know what to do with them. They don't like to take them back. But some people do. Some, they're big, those containers at the stores, when I put mine in, are just stuffed full.
All the time, yeah. Target, they're always full.
Anyway, go on. I'm sorry I interrupted
you. You know, and you could see from the pre and the post sort that, you know, we were able to bring the contamination down substantially in those areas. So, you know, I think that the pilot certainly supports the idea that, you know, this kind of quality control, it would be very effective. You know, we had some people, of course, that said, well, I'm just not going to recycle anymore. Well, okay. You know, it's always been a volunteer program. And if you don't choose to do it correctly, then you don't have to do it. Pat had somebody bring their bin back and wanted their $4 credit. We don't know where they came up with that, but... In their heads, they should have gotten a $4 a month credit.
Oh, no.
Well, tell them now that they're not recycling, there'll be a $4 surcharge for the additional material going into the landfill.
Well, that was a great report. So
it was.
Did the recycling partnership write that up?
No, we actually asked the consultants who did the pre and post sort to write the report.
Well, they did a great job.
Okay, well, I do think so. My computer for some reason went crazy, and I have two extra copies which I have bound. So if there's anybody who would like some copies, and there's a way to get it to them since we don't meet in person, I would be glad to contribute those to the go to the order.
Yolanda might like those.
Yes, I know. I was thinking specifically of her. Maybe I can get an address from you, Brittany, at some point and put one in the mail to her. Okay. I think it showed, as Pat was saying, that if we take out the 20 pounds of batteries, we would have been below the contamination, below the level at which we get the surcharge. So I think that's a really good thing to aim at. And it speaks to the need to speak to batteries, what to do with your batteries, all the way from electric car batteries down to the little batteries that people with hearing aids are using, those tiny things that dogs eat. So I don't know.
I get a report every month from the Recycle Coach, and they tell us what is the most searched for material. And for the last few months, it's been batteries.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, any other questions? Anything else? Christina, you want to say about the report, other than it was well done and interesting? And...
No, I don't think so.
Any critique?
I hope it helps. I hope it's a document that you can use over and over to help you out.
Have you sent it to the city council offices?
No.
And do you intend to?
I believe that's what Carlos would like to do.
Yeah. Good. So.
And how do we encourage him to do that?
He's aware that we have it, and I know he wants to do it. So
Okay. So he will be doing that. I did think the one comment is that the enforcement actions, they didn't have information. So they didn't know whether, how that was happening. Have we had any actual enforcement, such as pulling cans, as a result of this?
We took some when people said they didn't want to recycle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I kind of made the decision after we started seeing that it was always plastic bags. Mm-hmm. That was the most, we would have removed a lot of people that were just for plastic bags. And I didn't feel like that should be the reason people are kicked out. Mm-hmm. I would want to kick people out for putting, the trash, the regular trash. And so we were fortunate in that we didn't have a lot of repeat offenders with really bad stuff.
Okay, so rather when put in trash, such as diapers, car engine.
Food waste, yard waste.
Okay, and again, probably when we can, if we had inspectors that tag the ones and say, oops, you forgot about plastic bags not going in. I do think it's interesting the problem that people think that they collect the recyclables in a bag and they drop the whole thing rather than dumping it in. I know I've had people staying at my house, guests, and I've had to go and teach them or take out the bag and empty it. So I do think that is that message needs to be done over and over. Perhaps that's one for the trucks. Which is complicated because, yes, bag it for the green, don't bag it for the blue or something. We can work on that. Okay, well, thank you for finally getting it written up and giving us a tool to start taking some action on. Christine, anything else on waste diversion you want to talk about? Or?
No, not at this time.
Okay. All right, collections, Pat.
So the Los Reales landfill update, just a couple of things. We went with SCS. They're the contractor that we're using, or the consultant firm is putting together the action plan for the new Cell 4B. So we're meeting with them and finalizing all the plans as to, how far is the liner going to go and how big is this going to go and what's going to be the strategy for driving in, and where we're going to be working the landfill from South 4A. Are we going to work it east? Are we going to work it west? Where the leachate is all going to go into place, all the drainage as far as rain, how that's all going to travel with the landfill, and what route paths are we going to take? So we met and on Monday, kind of went over that. We'll finalize that. We have to get back to them by Friday with a couple ideas of what we want to do. And then the other thing that I think they just gave the notice to proceed is to start the construction at the HHW facility out there. So hopefully we'll get that up and running. We'll get the storage location so we can actually start storing the HHW material at Los Reales, because right now we're having to store it still on Sweetwater. Once we get that all in place, and hopefully we'll have that done by October. Once that's said and done, then we'll close out the facility at Sweetwater and only use Los Reales at that time going forward for HHW. The city can determine what they want to do with that facility on Sweetwater.
Okay. Okay. And so Sweetwater is just storage. It is not being used for any collections. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's closed down for collections. We only use it for storing the material because the storage boxes that we have for storing the material are still there. Okay. They're just old and outdated, so that's why we're buying new ones.
Okay. New ones at Los Reales.
It was actually going to cost us almost, I want to say close to $20,000 just to relocate those boxes. And as old as they were, it just didn't make sense to do that.
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes things have to go. All right. Routing.
Routing. Any questions for you? Routing, we're actually going to reroute our Monday routes. This has been a big request from a lot of our employees. Part of, you know, the union staff and our employees have gone together and have raised concerns about how the routes are uneven. And they actually are a little bit uneven. You have some routes, and we've done that intentionally in some areas, just that we haven't really done a reroute in probably, gosh, I want to say at least 7 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while since we've done a reroute. So there's a big off balance. I mean, you have some routes that might have 1,200 homes, but you have another route that only has 600. But they kind of balance depending on where they are in town and what the distance is to the MRF or landfill, depending on what that is. That always kind of dictated how many customers we were able to put on each route. They've recommended that we balance across the board and just say, okay, everyone's close to, say, 900 stops. And at the end of the day, they're going to go hop out anyways. So they wanted to give that a try. So we said, okay, let's do that. So we've just finished rerouting all Mondays. We're not going to do the whole week just yet. We're going to do Mondays. We had to hire a new GIS person because we didn't have one. Actually, the GIS person we had for almost 20 some odd years retired about 10 months ago, not a year. Retired. We finally got a GIS person in place. So he's getting used to it, and he's understanding how our routing is different and how we got to do that. So we're doing it's taking a little bit longer. But our goal is to actually start it on either the first part or the last part of June would be when we run the Monday routes with the new routes with the operators. Once we test it, run it out for a couple of months, see how they're working out. If everything works well and we see we're being efficient and not inefficient, we didn't create some inefficiencies, then if it works out, then we'll actually extend that and start doing Tuesday through Friday.
Are you still tracking the trucks with the recorders on how they're running and how long so forth they take and stuff?
We are. We still have an AVL system, which is Zonar. That's our automated vehicle for tracking all our trucks. We still do that.
It's called Zonar, isn't it?
Zonar.
To track the trucks.
Something I failed to mention at Los Reales, and I don't know if everyone's aware of that, is that we used to have long lines, a lot of buildup at Los Reales landfill. I mean, sometimes it would actually go out to I-10. We implemented a new program. We used to use AutoScale. We ended up switching over to a system called Paradigm, which it's called Paradigm.
Okay.
And it's sped up the process at Los Reales. We don't have the long lines anymore. We used to, on our transactions, because we don't accept cash anymore. We're probably not going to do that anymore going forward. We're going to accept cash. Everyone's kind of gotten educated and understanding that, you know, the credit cards are the way to pay or set up an account with us to do that. We've noted that's a huge improvement. We used to take about, I would say on an average, 2 minutes and 38 seconds a transaction. We've dropped it down to about 30 seconds a transaction. So it's much smoother, faster, easy reporting. The scale house operators are liking it. At first it was difficult just because it was a change. They've been using that system for, at least 20 years. And for us to change, make a little bit different on the scale house. But what's amazing is anybody new, the scale operators we brought in new that hadn't used it for so long, caught on so much faster and realized it was easy. So anybody new coming in, it's easy to train them on the new system compared to, you know, new habits, right? So so that's actually working out really well. The routing. Yep.
Part of the routing as well. So does that mean that, yeah, my gosh, I must say that it's incredible when I listen to the morning news and where the accidents are, how many are at Los Reales. I often wonder how much are because of the trucks involved, the trucks, you know, the traffic down there. And so I'm sure anything that moves the traffic better on that road
is helpful.
The benefit. Yeah.
Yep. And it's an industrial area. I mean, it's pretty heavily utilized. You have the truck stops that are in the area, Triple T and the Pilot. So you have a lot of equipment moving through there.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, we'll hope for the best with the new routing and see how it works
itself. Yeah, we'll give it a shot. We'll try it out.
Yep. It's. I'm sure it'll be satisfying to the employees to have some of their suggestions taken, and hopefully we'll build some good rapport with that.
Yep, that's the goal.
Homeless camp.
So the homeless camp protocol, I'm not sure. I think actually Yolanda, I think actually asked this one to be put on there because there's a lot of homeless camps, you know, everyone knows, everyone sees them everywhere. And we continue to work on that. I just got asked actually today to sit on a task force of a group. They have like someone from transportation, myself, Sarah from the 10th floor at city manager's office, and police department. We're all going to be trying to put together and working on a task force on how we're going to clean up some of these sites, all along with housing. You know, they actually play a key role on this as far as trying to get, you know, if they are displaced, where are they going to be displaced to? Are we going to have locations for them to go to? And if not, are we going to do just a cleanup and let them back? That's kind of been a concern going forward. But that's where we're just going to start working on that and start meeting on a bi-weekly status to put together some game plans and see what that cost or what that initiative is going to entail.
You know, at our trig annual meeting on Saturday, we had our new police chief come and speak. And of course, the homeless issues in neighborhoods came up. He would rather, you know, get them set up, I guess, in motels, old motels. He doesn't really want to do the outdoor camp, like Steve K has mentioned. So I don't know if that keeps getting batted around, but the whole feeling that the police chief had was, you know, it's pretty unbearable to live outside in the summertime when it's too hot and in the wintertime when it's too cold. So.
But if you talk to the people, there are a lot of people, that's a choice. They actually refuse to go into shelter. So
Right.
You know, Margo's exactly right. You know, a lot of them don't want the help. I mean, they offer assistance to everyone that they can. A lot of them, you know, have either mental illnesses or that, and they just do not want the help. So it is a challenge. And I know actually they are looking to purchase a couple like hotels or some facilities that they can actually facilitate some, but you know, I think the challenge is going to be, you know, do you force them to go stay at this when they really don't want to? Because I don't think we might get them there for one night, but that's not a guarantee they're going to be back the second night.
And then they get pushed from neighborhood to neighborhood. So when they move them from Palo Verde, they come into Garden District.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And we go across.
Oh, they do keep moving around. I must say, I think it's been interesting to watch other cities deal with this. I mean, I follow what goes on in the San Francisco Bay Area. They've really found that these small homes are areas set aside. And for people living out of their vehicles, which a lot of people are doing because of the price of housing, that churches and so forth have set aside places in their parking lots for during the week where people can do that. And you have to go through a permitting process. So you can't just, you know, post a sign and say, come stay here, because you have to provide, you know, porta potties and water and some amenities.
They do that in San Diego.
So anyway, I'm sure all of that will be, and we'll watch how that comes along. Do you know what sort of ballpark, what your cost for the cleanup? I mean, what kind of a, what shall I say? What's your skin in the game? You being, yes, skin in the game in terms of cost.
I think we're going to have to look at that. We really don't know, because all the services we provide all kind of fit in together. I mean, because we'll pick up, we'll go and pick up, spend a couple hours picking up, you know, illegal dumping, or we'll pick up fresh and bulky. And you know what? While you're in there, go ahead and clean up this homeless camp. So unfortunately, a lot of our services that we provide are very mixed in and blended in. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly what that exact cost is going to be. We are going to look at that and analyze it. And see if we can't come up, you know, is that a, you know, 33% might be. I just don't know what that number is right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll make a difference as the city as a whole comes together with that. You know, whether ES is spending $100K a year and the police department is spending another 100, and all of a sudden you have a package of, you know, $1 million or something. You know, now you can start looking at a really coordinated program where if people are just contributing 10, 15K, then it obviously other sources of funding will have to be found. But anyway,
well, I think you're spot on, Margo. I think you're spot on. I think that's kind of the conversations we're going to start having, is that they're going to ask us all to give them an idea as to what we think that cost is, that cost analysis is, so we can put together that kind of an idea. So I think you're spot on.
Good. Okay. Recycling contamination. Did we cover that enough, or what's happened to the meeting? You were going to meet with them or ask the people from the procurement to talk about how the MRF was not living up to their contract.
So we did actually. The recycling contamination, I think, is kind of what the agreement is right now, that we extended it out till I want to say June. And we're negotiating that right now. We actually are creating the draft as to what we that next amendment to be, whether it's going to be amendment 7. And this next amendment, we want to actually carry it out to the end of the life of the contract, which expires in June of 27. So we're in the process of doing that now. I want to say, Christina, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's like 30th of June. Is that when that we asked for the extensions to, you know?
That's what we're projecting that will be.
So what are you thinking about going into that amendment?
A lot of it is going back to what we haven't seen from them on the current agreement that we have, the contract, and kind of doing away from all the other amendments. I mean, up to amendment, I want to say 6, and basically, you know, do away with all the amendments, go back to from the startup of this thing and kind of try to implement a lot of what the program started out to be. And carry out for the rest of the month. We understand the TIF fee has gone up. We have no problem with that. Our concern is the ACR, we don't think is being, it's not fair. It's not really building a partnership between the two locations as far as a partnership on the ACR. So we really want to look at that. And like I said, we're just right now putting together what that's going to look like.
Okay, well, that's going to be really important because it is going to change some of the financial dynamics of the of what's happening. And it seems to me, especially as the prices go back up again, that the city needs to gain some of that.
Christina, did I miss anything on that? Because I mean, even when I look at the report that you just gave us, I mean, ACR is like, what was it, 129 or something like that?
Yeah, it's pretty high.
It's high.
Yeah, it's up there. And
Christina, did I miss anything on that as far as
No. Okay. And you know, if we went back to the original agreement, you know, we would have the tipping fee, and then we would have to agree on a shared revenue without the, you know, they have to get their $85 before we get anything. That's, you know, not where we were prior.
And as I recall, then we just had a residue, you know, we did pay obviously what the landfill charge was for them to dump the residue. But I think this thing about, as I recall our discussions earlier, that they were supposed to have less than 5%, which they call them orphaned recyclables, in the residue, needs to be enforced. If they're not doing that, then they need to start paying a fee, or they need to forego what the residue cost is or something. But
well, we did bring that up to them. And I think one of the things we have to make sure we address in this new negotiation is how do we calculate that? Because mm-hmm. their idea of how to calculate it and our idea of how to calculate it are very different.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Okay, so one of the things it seems to me would be to be able to talk about the fact that you're working on bringing down that residue, you know, with some of these new plans that we're going to be talking about, that it shows we can bring it down and recognizing where they are. I mean, to them, it's just a nuisance. But, you know, when you think about that belt going along, and I think about this sometimes when I'm putting a box inside a box, you know, in my recycle bin just to take up less space rather than stomping on it. How do I know that that particular, how that will get picked up and put into the bale that they're going to make at the end? And how do they see that as the belt is going past? And there is a whole bunch of newspaper and stuff on top and their boxes underneath, and they need to pull those out. You know, how do they do that? And so, you know, I think there's some technical issues that need to be discussed, or training issues, or something to do with how the folks that are doing that sorting. So I hope that gets to be part of the discussion.
That's all I have on the collection side.
Okay. Let's see. So other than the routing, all the trucks are operating, no new trucks or?
Oh yeah, actually we've received 3 new trucks out of the 8 that we ordered. So we have 5 more that are still coming in. Hopefully in the next month and a half, we should have all 8 trucks in. And we're not gonna be, we'll be ordering new trucks, but to be honest with you right now, ordering a piece of equipment is almost taking a year to get come in. You know, something that used to take us 7 to 8 months right now is taking a year if we're lucky, you know, get those in. So what we're going to do is the 8 trucks that we were going to turn in surplus, we're sending them back to the dealer and they're going to refurbish them. It'll be half the cost. So we're going to refurbish them. They're going to redo the whole body, cylinders, and fix it all up, repaint it, do it all. And they're actually removing the body from the chassis. And they're going to refurbish it, basically come back like almost a brand new body. The chassis is going to Peterbilt dealership, where they're going to refurbish that. We go through the whole thing, you know, from bumper to bumper, and fix everything so that once we put it together, we should probably get about 3 or 4 years left of life on this equipment. So it'll be half the cost. I'm sorry?
So where did you get the idea of doing this?
I just basically thought about it since I knew we weren't going to be able to get the new equipment so fast. And I thought this would buy us more time.
And how long will this refurbishing take?
It's taking right now about 3 months.
Oh, not bad.
We're just doing the first one now, you know, and the first one's going to be the test. It came in, the guesstimate when we turned it in came in at about 200,000. Almost 100,000 for the body and 100,000 for the chassis. This first one that's in there is going to give us a better idea, because as they're going into it, and each one's going to be different.
Sure.
You know, you just don't know which parts are going to need replaced and which ones aren't. It could vary depending on different trucks. So we'll find out at the end of this, and I'll share with everyone what it looks like. Hopefully share some photos of what it looks like. But we're pretty excited that, you know, for right now to purchase a new truck, is coming in about 120,000.
A new truck is how much?
About 420,000.
400. Okay, I'm sorry. I heard 100 and I was going,
well. I wish. 420. And to give you an idea, electric truck right now.
Yeah, I know.
We got a quote on that one the other day. that came in at 735. 735,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the body.
Prices come down. Now it's all the batteries.
Has nothing to do with the body. It's all in the chassis.
In the chassis. Oh.
The whole truck. The truck is actually changing. It's doubling the price.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on those trucks.
Sure.
Okay. Christine, any questions or? Christine, public outreach update. How did Zero Waste go?
It went really well. We had about 175 vehicles come through. All of the collectors were happy with what they got. Evolve, which did the e-waste, got a whole truck load, so they were happy. Goodwill got quite a bit. Bookman's got like one really full Gaylord of books. The shredding went well. Beacon was happy. Recyco, they didn't get a lot of scrap metal, but they were happy because they were able to get the word out about their services. Mm-hmm. Meds was a big turnout. We got a lot. The police were there and he had to make several runs to their office to drop stuff off because they got so much. And I put them next to Saro, who were collecting prescription bottles. So it worked out really well. and then even like prescription glasses and American flags, we got a bunch, which I was very surprised about, but we did. And then
who took the flags?
Well, there's a woman who has been part of the Earth Day committee for many years, and she does a lot of volunteering at the VA.
Okay.
And so she was going to turn them over to the American Legion.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave she told me that next time the disabled American veterans want to be involved because they would like to collect medical equipment like crutches and walkers and wheelchairs because they donate those, refurbish them and donate them to disabled veterans. So, and then, you know, just hearing from a lot of people, you know, I wasn't able to be there. When's the next one?
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, yeah.
And well, that's great. So that sounds like it was a big success. So that should, it sounds like we should try to do that every 6 months. I know it's a lot of work, but maybe after it sort of gets into the groove of who's there.
Well, you know, we had a lot of support community-wide for this event. Mm-hmm. Chapman Auto stepped up and paid for lunches for the volunteers. The Earth Day Committee donated some money for food. Pima County donated some money which we used for advertising. We can't always count on that. And so that's going to be, you know, the question. Okay, so if we have to do this on our own, how do we cover all of this?
Did you read the grumpy person's letter to the editor?
I didn't.
Okay, so the person was concerned that everybody waiting in line to drop things off were idling their cars.
Well, we didn't have, the flow was very steady, but we didn't have any time where people were lined up like they are for HHW.
Right.
I think that was an HHW issue.
You're right. That it was.
But good. Wow. I mean, I just think of all those things that people would have put into the landfill or, you know, had to make some sort of special trip. And it's great that they were able to do that. So the question really is dollars where to come from. How about from the mayor's office? Since she's so big on sustainability, here's a place where she can put some money. All right.
I don't know. We're having a debriefing meeting with all the people who participated next week. And so hopefully we'll get more of an idea of, you know, if people are willing to do it more often. You know, we know how to do the setup. It was a lot of work. You know, we had several of our staff who were there were, you know, getting paid overtime and got there very early. Having it at our building was really helpful, though, because we didn't have to have any tents or anything because of the shade structures. It was really a perfect, you know, way to line people up. And, but yeah, it's just going to be a matter of, you know, are people willing to come out more than once a year? And if so, you know, how do we take on the rest of the tasks?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yes, it is a lot of work to do the organizing, but since it was the first time, it was harder. I mean, I think of the times that you did things before, like you emphasized jeans and everybody brought old jeans like to the ward offices and then they were sent up to Phoenix to be made into insulation. And another time you took, I forget what, I'm always remember the jeans. I think you took garden hoses another time so that people could, and somebody was going to make them into drip irrigation systems and stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, but I think though that the way we did it was really nice to focus on things that we all have a lot of sometimes and letting, you know, I mean, a big goal of this was to promote that there are options for all of these things in our community.
Yeah.
And you don't have to wait for a collection.
Okay. And I've just been trying to work some with FreeCycle. And so it's interesting to me to see what is on there and who is doing things. Like when we were this famous a year ago where we were dismantling an apartment for a person who was going essentially into assisted living. And what did you do with all this furniture, which was really in pretty bad condition, you know, and Habitat didn't want it. And they've gotten really quite fussy about a lot of these things. And to see on FreeCycle that in fact, there are people taking old furniture and, you know, refurbishing it and doing things that I thought there should be people doing those things. And indeed, I think, you know, part of it is knowing where to look for that. And at that time, a year ago, we didn't look in the right places to get it well taken care of instead of just taken to the dump. So excuse me.
Well, a lot of people pick up old furniture and stuff through brush and bulky.
Right. That I know too. People run ahead of brush and bulky and pick up old furniture. Yep. So, and not to mention just wandering around town and seeing it lying around, at least on my routes. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad it was such a success. Good, congratulations on the group and to
thank you
to doing all that hard work. Earth Day was then the next day, which was crazy.
Earth Day was the following week.
Okay.
And we went out to the Children's Museum and we had a really good turnout. There were so many people and, you know, I think as someone said, it's just people were ready to get out.
So what did you do there that was special?
Oh, we just, you know, gave out information, gave out some giveaways, quizzed people on the recyclables. Good thing I had, you know, quite a few staff there to answer questions because we were really busy. We brought some bales out from Republic Services so people could see them. And there was a young man from the materials science engineering program who was showing me his plastic that's done with mushrooms.
Oh.
His Well, I guess it's like molded paperboard or something, you know, but he says it's mixed. It's OCC with this mushroom stuff. Pretty interesting. Yeah. So that was that. And then next week we do have our HHW collection at the rodeo grounds.
Okay.
So, and well, that's going really well.
Yep, I was going to say, it seems to me that that's been a big success.
Yes, and actually, I talked with the police at our event, and, you know, because of the turnout with the meds, you know, one of the things I want to do maybe for next year's HHW is talk with them about doing that at our events every month. Mm-hmm. And whether they'd be willing and able to do it. You know, we tell people you can go to any of the police substations, but the officer was telling me, yeah, they can, but we're not always open anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because they're short staffed.
Yeah. I for some reason thought they would be there. And when I went to the HHW a couple of months ago, I had brought meds to dispose of and was disappointed that they weren't there. So, so I think it would be well worthwhile. All right.
Yeah. And, you know, they were really happy to help. Officers from the South Division, you know, they're great. They were really, really helpful, and they're you know, we sent a note to their commanding officer thanking him, and you know, they were, you know, they, I think they would be willing to help us with other events for sure.
Great. Well, that would be a nice cooperation as well. For, does the city manager say one city, one something?
Yes, one city, one team.
One city, one team. Hey, we haven't done too well with code enforcement, but we sure can give you old meds. All right. Any questions for Christina? Have you any help yet, Christina?
I have a temp right now who's helping me with some website stuff, but that's, you know, the city is going to a whole new website. Probably it'll all transition like in October. And so she's been going through and updating a lot of the pages, and then so that we'll be in a position where things can be migrated easily. And then she'll help me with getting the intranet, the departmental intranet set up, because I haven't had time to work on that at all. So yeah, I mean, she helps, you know, she's doing about 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's great having the help. It's just, it's not the same as having Kendra for sure.
Well, and you could use a whole lot more. So that's the bottom line. It's not, I'm sure she's doing a great job, and I'm very happy that you have somebody helping you. You need help just because you've got so much on your plate. All right. Speaking of that, Lori, I see you're on our call. How is Cody?
I am. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. Hope everyone can hear me. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty, but sound shouldn't be an issue. So it looks like we have two items for code enforcement. The first one being food vendor guidelines and safety concerns. I believe that's related to some peddler enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Yolanda is concerned about that a lot. In her neck of the woods.
Yeah, so I do have a case opened for a parcel over at 12th and Drexel. and what we're going to do, and we actually haven't had a lot of peddler enforcement in the past year. It's been really focused on like homeless protocol, a lot of other diversions. So I'm actually going to use this as a training opportunity for some new inspectors we have coming on and some other newbies we have to have in the office. You know, they can't leave out equipment. You have to have the peddler's license. You have to have Pima County Health Department license as well. So we're going to go over all that. I believe there's more than one vendor probably out there. It's a pretty large parcel. But like I said, we haven't had too many concerns lately. And it used to be we got quite a bit, you know, maybe 5 years ago. And looks like the second point is about the audit, the Independent Audit Commission.
So Lori, stop you just a minute. So if I get the messages, you're setting up to do more enforcement. You haven't been doing it. Is that correct?
We haven't received the complaints.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's right. You're complaint driven. So.
Correct. And it was, you know, I think it's about 5 years ago. We were receiving a lot more of them, but, you know, you find over time, you know, that certain types of violations come into favor more than others at any given time. And,
okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood. All right. The Independent Audit Performance Commission.
Yeah. So the last I heard on this is that it's going to be wrapping up pretty soon. They're currently reviewing our caseload, about 100 of our cases from last year between the three commissioners. I imagine that's finishing up pretty soon. So I think, as far as I know, you know, we should see this report pretty soon.
So you haven't actually met with them in the last month?
No, not since we last met here.
And when was that?
Well, give me just a moment. I can tell you when it was.
Well, they had one the end of March, the 22nd.
Yeah, that's probably.
And then another one earlier in March.
So that's exactly what I got. It was March 22nd.
Yeah, but okay. But nothing in April.
No.
I had to do a report for our annual TRIG meeting, and I looked at the number of hours that you guys have spent educating the auditors and just all the extra hoops you've had to jump through, and it came pretty close to 28 hours of your time. And Carlos was there, and I know Pat and Christina, you were at some of those meetings, right? So they're not.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Various times a lot of us were participating.
Oh yeah, it was a whole group. So
yeah, we sat in on those meetings, and I think we're just hoping they finalize this report. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. I know they were going to schedule meetings and do some ride-alongs and evaluate some of the cases.
Oh, they just need to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah, I just I think they have enough information. I believe this is my own personal thought, because I think they have enough information right now that they can finalize a report.
Yes.
Except that it's a really tough and complicated issue, since we've been listening to it for several years. We're all aware of that. So understanding and then trying to come up with some solutions is going to be really challenging.
Well, do they come up with solutions, or are they mostly just going to put together a report to send to mayor and council about you know, how it is now.
I think they put together a report, and they do have a conclusion, and I think they do make some recommendations. Some, yeah. Not completely, but just some recommendations.
I mean, it won't be terribly useful for them simply to document all the issues and complications.
About making some recommendations.
I hope they make some recommendations.
Yeah, we'll see.
And it's not just throwing money at it. Though that probably could help, especially like giving them two of their own attorneys to move that stuff along faster.
Yeah, that's what we need.
But we'll see.
An attorney and more inspectors and equipment, right?
This all sounds good.
That's good. All right. Well, I think we want to keep that on the agenda so we keep moving along. All right. Any other Lori things interesting happening in code enforcement we should know about or you'd like to tell us?
Certainly. We actually have three new inspectors hired, and they'll all be starting very soon. So we've got a training plan, and we hope to get them out, you know, as soon as possible, start on some property maintenance, kind of have them float around three sections of the city since there's three of them, you know, and start hitting those property maintenance. And then further along in their training, you know, they'll get more in zoning and other more high priority type violations. But that right there is going to help us a lot.
Great. Well, congratulations. You finally got them. Now we just hope they stay.
Yeah. Well, but remember, what was it? 2015, they had 17 inspectors. So
yeah.
We can't give up on making sure they have enough people. So yeah. You've been starved long enough. I just have a quick question, Lori. A lot of the, you know, I've been having some problems with, you know, the smoke shops and stuff with their signs and banners. On the PVSD yes. site, they say that because during the pandemic, they've been letting people get away with that. Has there been any announcement from them that it's time to start billing people for their signs and making sure that they don't have too many banners and all that stuff?
I actually was in an email chain with them. The inspector does handle sign inspections over at PDSD. They're still under their COVID regulations for banners, and I think it's A-frames too, where they're not requiring a permit, but they are requiring permits for all other signs.
Okay.
They're allowed one banner. A business could be allowed one banner without having to get a permit, but after that, yes.
So they are starting to crack down on banners or not?
Only if they're in excess, I believe. I have to go back and read the regulations again on their COVID COVID page, but my understanding is they're allowed one banner. So after that would presumably be a violation.
Okay, I guess I need to file.
Well, it used to be, yeah, when it was permitted, a business could have one banner per facade facing the street. So if you were on a corner, you could potentially have two. And then they were limited. I think it was 90 square feet in size, but not right now.
Okay.
But I'll follow up with them. You know, I'll ask that inspector if they think that's going to come soon or not, you know, or end rather.
Who would be a good person for me to talk to at PDSD? Do you think? I used to bug Corin, but she's so busy all the time. And I know Daniel was the one that worked on the sign stuff.
Dan Brzezak.
Brian Weiss.
Who?
Brian Weiss is the, he's pretty much handles the sign section. Yeah. So it's B-R-I-A-N and then W-E-I-S-E.
Okay, I've seen his name. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the fact too that they're not checking on permits, people with permits. And you know, you're helping me with 1144 North Alvernon, which is a smoke shop that has never satisfied and completed permits, but they've been able to be a business now for, you know, a year and a half without any permits. So
I know they're going to get I believe they're going to get a citation for one, if not two, of the signs. So.
Okay. But also no striped parking or handicap parking. So anyways, all right. I can stop. It's getting close to 4:30. I could just go on and on, as you well know.
I know. You are our private sign inspector, private code inspector, working as a volunteer. All right. Well, Lori, I'm delighted to hear about the new, finally some new actual inspectors joining your group, and that you've got them out there getting some experience. That's terrific. So congratulations on that. All right, future items for the next meeting. I'd like to talk a little bit about the electric vehicle batteries, how we're proposing they be disposed of in this city.
Okay.
And what else do we want to know? I guess continue the
updates on the routing and Los Reales.
Yep, and the homeless. And also your negotiations with the recycling contamination.
With Murph. They shouldn't brag about how much money they're making.
I know, that's amazing. It's like, when you see that report, you're like, okay, we're making all this money recycling. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You're going to advertise that in the newspaper. And I wasn't too sure on that article, Margo.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're referring to Tucson or they were referring to either. New Mexico. I thought it was I was trying to look at it. And I thought it was El Paso that they were looking at.
Well,
when I went to the website and the link and I clicked on it, it was showing me either El Paso or Albuquerque, or somewhere over there, either Texas or New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
It's over there.
Yeah.
It just says it operates in 41 states, including Arizona.
Right.
It says it was in Vogue. Recycling is in Vogue, New Direction. More recycling potential for customers. Yeah, it wasn't clear to me either where it was.
Yeah, okay.
And the other was, I was amazed that they are the second largest company on the stock market in Arizona, Freeport-McMoRan being the number one player. And right behind that was Waste Management. So you might point that out to them, that they can't be crying poor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that they're obviously, the newspapers reports them as doing well. I couldn't find any. The other was about the fire, that there was a fire in recycling. Whose recycling group that actually was? That was about within the last month.
Yeah, that was a big fire. It would last about 3 or 4 days. And they're called UCC Recycling.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably started up, I said they've probably been in operation here probably about 2 years, maybe. Close to Los Reales, close to like Benson Highway and Alvernon, probably be the closest major cross streets that I'd be looking at. I haven't heard what caused the fire or what was the fire, but it pretty much, they lost everything.
I mean, yeah, they did.
So what were they actually recycling?
They do a lot of cardboard and a lot of rigid plastics.
And so they have private routes and stuff?
They actually, they partner a little bit with Republic on some of the items that was collected, and then they do their own collection as well.
Huh.
And a lot of it is shipped in. Like they, I think they were getting a lot of plastics from Mexico and from different locations, because it's, you know, the rigid plastics that they're cutting up and trying to recycle. And I think that's why the fire was pretty intense due to all the plastic.
Yeah. Oh, I know what. I guess it's really out of your hands, the blocks that Steve Kozacek is so concerned about, that we're not getting, the city doesn't seem to be able to use them to build anything. They're just sitting in a warehouse. But that really doesn't concern you, right? That's really...
Yeah, no, I think Carson will probably give you guys an update on that at the main ESAC.
Well, I just think that, you know, everybody's trying to figure out the budget, they're trying to hire people, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, that's not on the top of the list of things that need to be done. So,
right. Okay.
I just hope it's not a showboat thing, so.
Okay, the materials recovery facility report, if we're to continue. And then whatever new things Christina has going for her, and code enforcement, I guess, just a general update on cases and also the independent audit and performance commission. So.
Oh, and real quick, you know, maybe you could explain the articles that you read about the U.S. recycling only about 5% of plastic waste last year. I don't know how they come up with that number, but it was an article. Have you heard anything like that before?
I have not.
Okay.
I can tell you that like single-use plastic bottles, we probably nationally only recycle about 20% of them.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, honestly, I mean, this is where zero waste comes in. I think what we have to do is just move away from plastics,
right?
Because, you know, there's so much confusion about how to recycle them, and we would be better off if we didn't just use them, if, you know, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wondered.
It's a tough number. Tough issue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, to be continued.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you
for your participation. And we have a call to the audience. Audience? No?
No.
No audience. Then no.
Well,
the meeting adjourned.
You guys are amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Yeah. Thanks. Right, thank you.
Next Thursday.
Trying to find the camera. There it is. All right. Bye.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.